The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Do you believe in ghosts? Oh, not necessarily the old-fashioned kind, dragging clanking chains behind them, the fetid odor of the grave, voicing the ghastly groans of souls in torment, or threatening some terrible supernatural justice that they intend to wield. I'm thinking of gentler ghosts who have your interest in mind, not your destruction.
No consciousness yet, Kathy?
No.
How's the scope, nurse?
T-waves are almost flat.
What happened, Bruce?
Potassium imbalance. She must have lost too much.
Can we save her?
We damn well better. Stephen Champion signed his death warrant for this child. She's got to come through. Stephen had every reason for living. He's got to have a decent one for dying.
Mystery drama, Angel of Death, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Marion Seldes and Michael Wager.
Broadcast permission for the following program is made possible by the Columbia Broadcasting System.
With Act One.
And now, coffee.
Have you ever had a problem with cockroaches? Did it make you wish you were a flamenco dancer? A really good flamenco dancer? You could have danced all night, right? And even then, it's hit or miss. Well, for a more efficient way to control roaches and other pests, inside the house or out, write for the free leaflet, Pesticide Do's and Don'ts, to the National Audubon Society, 950 3rd Avenue, New York, New York, 10022. That's National Audubon Society, 950 3rd Avenue, New York, New York, 10022. And save your dancing for fun.
Extremely useful time-saving aids. But without proper precautions, they can be instruments of destruction. In fact, government statistics show that 80% of all electrical appliance accidents are due to carelessness. Underwriters Laboratories consumer safety expert Janice Farr says there's an easy way you can help avoid contributing to that 80%.
That's right. I strongly recommend that you read and heed your appliance instruction booklets. Most booklets contain valuable safety tips, such as recommending that you unplug your portable appliance from the outlet when not in use, and that you not let the cord hang over the edge of a table or counter, or touch hot surfaces.
And to be extra safe,
it's a good idea to keep your instruction booklets in a convenient place for quick and easy reference. Remember, the instruction booklet is there, so why not use it?
This has been a public service announcement from Underwriters Laboratories and this station.
This is a story of the present and of the past, and in a couple of ways, of the future as well. It is also a story of life and death, death both violent and accidental, and death that is natural and supernatural. It is a haunting story in the actual and also the figurative sense. It is a story of hope deferred and renewed. And it begins with a wildly emotional threat.
I could kill you, Frank!
Dee Dee, darling, for Pete's sake, get hold of yourself.
How could you dare? Everything I have to remember him by and cherish him by. You throw it out like discarded rubbish.
Do you think it didn't tear my heart out to do it, too?
I don't care what it did to you. All I know is what it did to me. You deliberately buried every memory I have of my son.
Your son.
Our son. If after what you've done can make you pretend he meant as much to you.
I resent that.
Well, I resent that you constitute yourself God. Or an amateur psychiatrist, whatever you think you are, to strip his room bare of all my memories.
Dorothy. Dorothy, we lost our boy. I was involved, too, just as much as you. But to continue to keep Jimmy's room as a sort of shrine, that was sick. To moon over the first sleeping animals we gave him, the bat and glove, I was sentimental idiot enough to give him too soon. To keep it all intact like little boy Blue's room as if he was coming back. That's what was destroying us and destroying you.
He was my only one. He's gone.
But the doctors all said...
The doctors.
With your background, you should thank them.
All right, once they saved my life, what could they do for our Jimmy?
There's a world of difference between being totaled in a crash like Jimmy was... and being rescued by medical science. 15 years ago, you'd have been just as dead if it wasn't
what
for...
What a terrible thing to say.
I'm trying to bring you to your senses. Good Lord, Dorothy, do you think I can stand by and see our marriage fall apart over a tragedy that should have and did shake us both to bedrock, but that we have to overcome?
I can't, Frank.
Darling, Dorothy, please, listen to me. We've lost Jimmy. He's gone. All I wanted to do was to clear him out of your mind because we can have other kids.
No,
and...
no. There aren't any substitutes. You can't try to make life a simple little exchange like that. A substitute won't bring Jimmy back.
Right. So why do you think I gave everything away of his change that unhealthy altar to a son we both once had into just another room in the house. I want you to forget Jimmy.
I'll never forget him.
Well, I didn't mean it quite that way. You don't understand.
You're right, Frank. We don't understand each other any longer. I feel my life is over. You don't. So... make the most of what you have left.
Where are you going?
Away. Out of it. A moment ago, I said a silly thing. I wanted to kill you. What I really should have said is I want to kill myself. Oh, I wish I had the courage. Because all I want to be is dead. Like my son.
Dorothy! Where are you going? Dorothy! No! Come back! Come back!
Please forgive me up there or wherever you are, if you are. I'm just coming apart and I don't know what could pace me back together. I don't even know what I'm doing in the car, hurtling through the night too fast for this mountain road. Why should I want to kill myself when I have a husband who's loving and kind? Even if he doesn't understand, I can't get over Jimmy's death. How can I blame Frank? And yet, to take all the mementos of my child away and give them to... What am I thinking? I'm mad. But face it, anyone who doesn't want to live anymore...
Which, aside from being an insult to me, is a silly thing to think at 26 years of age.
Who are you?
I'm not quite sure anymore. Once I thought I knew. Now I don't.
How did you get in the car?
That wasn't my problem. I'm always with you, whether you see me or not.
I don't understand. In a way,
You seem like someone I might have known, but I don't actually recognize you. And still, I'm sure we must have met.
Well, we did meet, but very briefly, a long time ago.
Yes, and I feel I owe you something.
No, I don't. It was just a fair exchange, your life for mine. And between us, I don't think mine could have been saved.
I'm puzzled. I don't...
So many things that puzzle you, aren't there?
Yeah, I must be seeing things, thinking things. I am alone in this car. There's nobody else but me.
That could be right.
What?
If you don't remember me, I guess I don't exist.
You mean you're a ghost?
Or something that haunts you.
Well, why would you haunt me?
Because you called.
I called?
Yes. Something to do with your conscience, I might imagine.
My conscience?
I think it's troubling you.
This is all crazy. Who are you?
You still don't remember?
I can't... Something... I must be mad talking to myself. You can't be here. There was nobody but me in the car when I got in. What are you doing here? Where are you from?
From inside your mind, buried deep in the layers of memory. What am I here for? To save you from yourself.
Well, what does that mean?
You blame your husband for your son's death?
Yes. Oh, no. Is it the thing that matters? The only thing that matters is when Jimmy was lost, we lost each other. I'll never find my way back to Frank, to what we had. Jimmy stands in the way. He always will.
And so you're running away into the night. To do what?
Oh, I don't know. To get away from it. I can't stand that empty room. And an empty heart.
You know you can't fill either of them up by running away.
I know.
You have some other idea? Did you want to kill yourself?
No. No, I don't believe in that.
Huh? Are you sure? Look at your knuckles. Dead white, because your hands are clenched so tightly on the wheel. Ah, look at your right foot, jamming the accelerator to the floor. Look in your heart. Consciously or subconsciously, didn't you have something like this in mind? Nothing. Yet. I wanted to give you a glimpse of the future. And I did.
You mean I'm going to crash?
I mean you could if you don't turn back.
I can't. There's nothing for me either way I turn. I've lost it all. I just don't want to live.
Well, I don't think that's quite fair to me.
To you? What claim do you have on me?
Maybe I'd better light up the past for you. Open your memory and tell you why I have, not a claim, but shall we say a vested interest in you. 16, perhaps 17 years ago, you were a little girl of 10 with a whole life ahead of you. And I was quite an old man of, early in my 70s, with most of my life behind me. I never married Dorothy, and I never had a child. The nearest thing was a young man who was one of my medical students and who, in the year that I'm talking about, was a pioneer in a process I helped to develop to save lives. Something taken for granted today, but in the late 50s, so new and so untried that it tied up five doctors who volunteered time for 8 to 10 hours at a stretch. I'll tell you about that later. That medical student I mentioned had just been made chief of surgical services of the Westfield Community Hospital here. And I was flying up to be at his wedding, to stand in loco parentis, since Bruce's father was dead. When suddenly the old man with the scythe decided to take a swipe at me.
Good morning, Dr. Johnson. You're on page.
I heard it. Thank you, nurse. I'm on my way to Dr. Harding's now.
You're a lucky girl.
Don't I know it? 3 days till the wedding.
I didn't mean that. I meant you're the only one in this hospital can answer that summons without taking a deep breath.
You think he's all that tough?
He runs a tight ship. You, maybe he treats with kid gloves.
Don't you ever believe it. When our new chief of surgery puts me on page, he wants the physician, not the fiancé. I'd better straighten up and fly, right?
Come. Good morning, Dr. Johnson.
Morning, Dr. Harding. Bruce.
Kathy, darling.
Every doctor's day should begin like this.
I wish mine had begun as well.
What is it?
No wedding shopping this afternoon. We're both needed on the artificial kidney. I'm just calling the team together now.
Who's the patient?
One of our wedding guests. Outside of my mother, the most important one on my side of the aisle.
Oh, not your old teacher, not...
Stephen Champion. Top biologist in this country, maybe in the world. They just called me from the airport. He's on the way by ambulance. Thank God we're one of the first hospitals in the country to have the machine.
Renal failure?
Possibly terminal. Certainly without the support we can offer.
Maybe it isn't that serious.
Let's not kid ourselves, Kathy. I talked to Steve briefly. Damn the luck. One of the great men of our century, teacher, scientist, Nobel Prize winner, pioneer in every kind of perfusion pump, including the kidney machine he's coming here to use. And the nearest thing to a father I've ever known.
Don't sound so hopeless, darling.
Face it, Kathy, he's not young. But, well, the way things go today, there's always hope. Stephen's given his whole life to medicine. The least we can do is try to save what's left of it for him.
And so we have turned back from a story of the present for one in the not-too-distant past, and have learned who that quiet, understanding ghost that haunts and tries to comfort Dorothy Maitland is, or was. But how was his fate tied in with hers? When did he die, and how? And why his concern? I shall return shortly with Act Two.
I'm Dr. John Tabak, and last night my son said to me,
Mom is always saying, why don't you smile and show your nice white teeth? But a fella doesn't always feel like smiling. You might get a poor grade in a test or get clobbered in a ball game. The other day, we lost in the ninth inning. Or it can be raining so hard you can't even throw a ball around. Some days nothing seems to go right. Who feels like smiling then? No way.
He was right. There are lots of days when the last thing you want to do is smile. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't take care of your teeth in those smileless times. I'm president of the American Society of Dentistry for Children, and we say keep them brushed and flossed the way your dentist tells you. Maybe when you feel like frowning, that's the time to clean your teeth. A little smile might even come through.
Wheels are ever spinning, shining spokes are catching sun. There are people seeking nature, seeking help and seeking fun.
Last year, over 15 million new bicycles were sold in the United States, and over 70 million are now in use. Studies show that the leading causes of bicycle accidents are loss of control, mechanical and structural problems, and the entanglement of foreign objects in the wheels. So, make sure your bicycle meets the new safety standard.
So cycle up, America, a craftsman are being told. There's a life that is riding on every make that gold.
For more information, write Bicycles, Washington, D.C., 20207. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission.
It is incredible to think that hemodialysis, or the artificial kidney, is a standard piece of supportive equipment available in any hospital today. In addition, it is small and portable. Medicine marches with such giant strides. Less than 20 years ago, hemodialysis was a new and only hope to preserve the patient's life. Transplants were still a thing of the future.
Atkins, what's this note about little Dee Dee Blake being scheduled for surgery?
Dr. LeBar's orders, Dr. Johnson. She had a reverse.
When?
During the night.
Why wasn't I notified immediately?
Well, the chief resident knows you're going to be married next week, and since Dr. LeBar is standby on the case...
The resident stuck his neck out. I'll be glad to lop it off for him later. My patients get my service. I'll have time to check Dee Dee before I go to the kidney room. I want to examine her myself. Will you see that she's prepped while I change? Oh, and notify Central where I'll be in case Dr. Harding needs me.
You can put Mr. Champion over there, orderly.
Brought me straight to the monster, huh, Bruce?
With a stop along the way, Steve. I examined you in the treatment room, ran off some tests.
Oh, did you now? I don't remember that. I must be worse off than I thought. Am I?
Just routine. I have to establish the balance of chemicals for the bath.
Coming to the point, I think you know that I'm a hard man to con.
I do.
We owe each other the truth, don't we, Bruce?
Yes, Steve. But you know it as well as I do.
Yeah. I would have liked to see you married and drunk some of your champagne, but I have no other complaints. It's been a long road, and there has to be an end sometime.
Not yet. Not by a long shot.
I wonder.
The artificial kidney saves lives every day.
I helped to build it for that.
Steve, 10 hours on it, and your own kidneys will be strong and healthy enough to fight the uremic infection.
I'm old, son. And I'm very, very tired. Why continue the fight? There's no one to battle for, no one of my own to mourn me.
That's simply not true.
No wife, no child, no issue. When I cease to function, then I am gone, like a snowflake melted on a river.
Not for me. You'll never be gone. Or a whole generation of people whose lifespan has been lengthened by your discoveries. Besides, you yourself have left us the means to prolong yours and the team of doctors I've assembled here to make sure it is prolonged.
Is this poor old carcass really worth all that trouble?
In my book, it is. Not only for this machine alone, but all the others you've worked on, the breakthroughs you've made. Who in the world is more worth it?
Make me sound like an entry in Who's Who. Dry words in a dusty book. My epitaph.
What I do or achieve in my lifetime will be a drop in the bucket next to what Stephen Champion has contributed. We need you for the next breakthrough.
You're a better con man than I gave you credit for. All right. Bring on your cannula. Let's make a fight for it.
That's the attitude. I'll go scrub to make the cut down. Oh, what? Excuse me. Kidney room, Dr. Harding speaking. This room is supposed to be zeroed out.
Bruce, it's Kathy.
Kathy, where the Sam Hill are you? We're all ready to go. You're keeping us waiting.
I'm sorry, darling. I may have to hold up things a little longer.
What does that mean?
I'm up in Dee Dee Blake's room.
Who? Oh, your favorite little patient, 513. Something's wrong.
I need you up here, Bruce.
Are you out of your mind? You know the one place I'm needed is right here. What is it?
What I was afraid of started last night. Dr. Labar scheduled her for ops this morning.
So? What do you want me to do about it?
Even though it's technically my case, he outranks me. I want you to countermand that order.
Why?
Because I think she's in no condition to stand surgery. I'm convinced I know what she needs, and that's a decision you're the only one who can make.
Oh, Kathy, for Pete's sake, let's not start our life together with you taking advantage of the fact that I...
Dr. Harding, this is Dr. Johnson talking to you, and this is an emergency.
All right, it had better be. I'll be right up there to see for myself. Steve, small crisis. Give me 5 minutes.
I've lived for 73 years, Bruce. I guess I can hang on for 5 more minutes.
And I don't like doctors anymore.
Even Dr. Johnson?
Oh, not her. We're forever friends.
We're also perennial pals, solid sidekicks, and bosom buddies.
It's a game. You have to be illiterate to play it.
That's with an A, not an I.
Of course. If you were illiterate, you couldn't play. Illiterate means the first letters of both words are the same, or any number. Like in Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers.
Or a big black bug bit a big brown bear.
That's pretty good for a man doctor.
And you're pretty smart for a 10-year-old.
Well, Dr. Johnson taught me. Old Dr. Labar never could. Anyway, he has a mustache.
I'm glad Dr. Johnson doesn't. But you know, Dr. Labar is a very good doctor.
I don't think so. He wants to operate on me again.
He told you that?
Just last night. He said I had one bad old kidney that was poisoning the other one, so he'd have to cut the naughty one out. He talks down, you know. But you won't let him, will you?
Talk down?
No, take it out.
We'll try not to, Dee Dee. Do you mind if I ask Dr. Johnson some questions?
Can I listen?
If you want. But I bet you won't understand. What's the blood urea nitrogen in the last 5 days?
Wednesday, 94.
Thursday?
115. Friday, 138.
Saturday?
Same, but today, 225.
What's the phosphorus count?
7.5.
Renal acidosis. Low calcium.
6.8.
Creatinine?
5.4.
You don't sound like doctors.
Oh? What do we sound like?
Quarterbacks, learning plays. I help my brother with his playbook. He's one.
A doctor?
No, a quarterback. He's only 15. I don't care. I'm so tired.
Nurse, get her back on IV. Come over here, Kathy.
What do you think, Bruce?
I think Labar was right. No question one kidney is seriously infected. I can tell that even from palpation. There's obvious bilateral involvement, not only indicated manually, but from the output.
So you agree to the operation?
Absolutely not. She's in no condition to take it.
Then you know what the answer is.
Hemodialysis.
That's why I called you up here.
After Stephen Champion.
It could be too late.
She could recover spontaneously. Dee Dee is young.
It's her youth that concerns me. She's just a little girl with her whole life ahead of her. But Stephen Champion. Oh, darling, I know how much he means to you. What a terrible thing I have to say. But which is the most deserving?
You cannot ask me to put Steve's life on the line. Yes, nurse, what is it?
It's Dee Dee. She's gone into coma.
I'll handle this, Kathy. Check Mr. Champion downstairs. I'll be with you the first moment I can.
You want me to set up the kidney machine for Dee Dee instead?
I don't know. How can I ask a man like Stephen Champion to risk giving up his life? Me, of all people.
How can you ask a child to give up her right to it? Oh, my darling, why must I be the one to ask you to make such a decision? Just a little oxygen, Mr. Champion. Nothing to be afraid of.
I don't need it. At my age, there's nothing left to be afraid of. Or everything. Who are you?
I'm Dr. Johnson.
No, you're not. You're Kathy.
sorry I held things up.
That's all right. Now, you're the girl Bruce Harding is going to marry.
Guilty as charged.
Oh, no, no, no. Life is for the young. And I wish you all its wonder.
Bruce will be right down. It's my fault he's delayed. I'm sorry.
I'm not. It gives me a chance to talk to you a moment. Just tell me about this little patient of yours.
Why do you want to talk about Dee Dee Blake?
Well, I have my reasons. Female?
Most definitely.
Attractive?
Adorable. Ah. Big, dark, haunting eyes. A complete femme fatale. She's 10 years old.
What's the matter with her?
Well, it should have been just a simple appendicitis, but it perforated.
Peritonitis?
Yes.
I begin to see a pattern. Probable sulfur reaction, huh?
That's right.
The threat of renal failure. Too late for surgical procedure.
How could you know all this?
I heard enough from this end when you were talking to Bruce to make an educated guess. This poses quite a problem, doesn't it?
I don't follow you.
Of course you do. She needs hemodialysis on an emergency basis, as I do. One kidney machine to serve two emergencies. Which do you save first, huh? 10-year-old girl with the dark, haunting eyes who might have the reserves of strength in her own young vitals to recover? A weak old man with possibly great contributions left to make to society, but who stands a good chance of not making it, even with supportive measures. No time to convene the death committee. This one's on Bruce alone. It's one heck of a hot potato you handed your husband to be, isn't it, Kathy? I wonder what he'll do.
The old man's blue eyes are still piercing under the shaggy brows, in spite of his weakness. Kathy is held immobilized, aware now that her fondness for her own patient has forced an unbearable choice on the man she loves. I'll return shortly with Act 3.
Today, you can help us realize a 200-year-old dream for all qualified blacks to get a college education. The United Negro College Fund and its 41 colleges are helping make this dream a reality. All it takes is money. And what's money compared to a 200-year-old dream? Once, it was against the law in some states to teach a black child to read or write. But the law didn't stop blacks from learning, and it didn't stop whites from helping, despite the danger to their lives and liberty. Supporting black education won't cost you your freedom anymore. Today, it just costs money. You can help make this dream a reality by giving as much as you can afford to the United Negro College Fund. Our future is on the line. Put your signature on the line today for the United Negro College Fund. A mind is a terrible thing to waste.
A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
Hi, this is Andre Fisher with Rufus. Today, many high school graduates who want to go to college find they can't meet the high cost of higher education. If college money is a problem for you, then I'd like to talk to you for a moment about a plan that will not only pay your tuition, but also pay you a monthly allowance while you're in school. What's the plan? It's the Naval Reserve Officers Training Corps program. If you can qualify, NROTC will pay the cost of your college tuition plus $100 monthly cash allowance. And when you graduate, you'll join the finest of America's land, sea, and air team as a Navy ensign or a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps. It's never too early to plan for a future with an exciting career. And you can start today by talking to your high school counselor or local Navy recruiter about NROTC. Call the Navy toll-free 800-841-8000.
as Kathy, her breath still caught in her throat, stares fixedly at the shrewd old man who has stated the dilemma Bruce faces, her brain fumbles to think what she would do in his position. And on a personal and selfish level, while wondering how Bruce will react, she cannot help a twinge of fear at what his decision will do to their personal relationship, whichever way it goes.
Tell me about your patient, Kathy. Tell me about this Dee Dee, or whatever her name is. Is she intelligent?
I think so.
And what contributions do you think she can make to society at large?
It's a little too early to tell.
Is it? Does she have good pelvic construction? Will she bear healthy children?
I'm sure she will someday.
So, that's Dee Dee. Now let's have a look at Stephen Champion. Do you know what I'm working on, or was, before I was hospitalized?
No, I don't.
In a complex field, the collagens. Well, I won't explain, except to say that the breakthrough I believe I am near could mean all the difference to thousands, to countless lives. Well, I'd like to be a part of that.
I don't blame you.
Well, not so much for myself, but if it doesn't sound too stuffy, for humanity.
I knew that's what you meant.
And there's also the thought that for faithful service, a man should be entitled to ask for a reward, isn't he?
Yes.
Particularly when the reward is the use of something he pioneered and developed.
There's no question.
Totally on the personal level, I wanted to be at your wedding more than anything else I can think of. Because Bruce Harding is the closest thing to a child I ever...
I think you've proved your point, though, Mr. Champion.
Have I? There you are at last, Bruce. You ready to start?
Stephen, I...
Well, come on, spit it out.
You know the artificial kidney can be the difference between life and death. You know that as head of the team, I must decide when and on whom to employ it.
You want to tell me that there's a child who needs it just as much as I. Let's stop wasting time. Get her in here and get started.
I'm not asking you to make the decision.
Of course you're not. I'm telling you. If it came to that point, you'd make the decision. In fact, you'd already made it, hadn't you?
Oh, Stephen, I...
You know damn well you had, and I heartily concur. Anyway, you can't hook me up to that contraption unless I agree. And I don't.
But I thought that you...
Oh, Kathy, my dear, I only took you over the hoops to make sure you knew the kind of guts it took for your husband to make this decision. And what a good man you're marrying. Now, let's get that little girl down here. And you, too, listen to me, both of you. You pull her through, or I'll never speak to either one of you again.
Is the bath ready, Kathy?
Yes, Dr. Harding.
Had enough time for diffusion, nurse?
All set.
How's your picture on the cardioscope, Dr. Mason?
See for yourself. I don't like those T-waves. We'd better get started.
I'll make the cut down.
Are they going to put me in that big tub?
No, dear. We're just going to attach you to it so it can take all the poison out of your blood.
How could you attach me?
I'm just going to make a little cut in your arm. Right here. And put the magic tube in.
Will it hurt?
No. Dr. Johnson is putting something on you so you won't even feel it.
I can't even feel my heart now. You won't let it stop.
I won't let it stop, Dee Dee.
How long have they been down with the little girl, nurse?
Only a couple of hours, Mr. Champion.
Long time to go. Man never grows too old for new experiences. For the first time, I know what a father goes through waiting for the birth of his first child. A new life for Dee Dee, as if she was born again. And I had a part in it, almost as if she were my little girl.
That's right. Close your eyes and rest.
No, not to rest, to pray.
How's the scope, Doctor?
T-waves are almost flat. What happened?
Potassium imbalance. She must have lost too much.
But can we save her?
After all that's happened, we'd better. Let me listen. Arrhythmia.
How high do you want the potassium, 5?
The way the EKG looks, bring it to 6. Let's see, what's the atomic weight of potassium?
39 plus.
Chlorine, 35, so in a 100-liter bath, that makes it 8 grams, right?
Go to the head of the class, you've got it.
Oh. Now we wait. Why does diffusion have to be so damnably slow?
You sure it was potassium?
Damn well better be. We'll have lost 2 patients. It's 100-1 Stephen signed his death warrant for this child. She has got to come through. Stephen Champion has every reason for living. He's got to have a decent one for dying. Morning, Stephen.
Morning? That's you, Bruce. When are you going to hook me up to that infernal machine of ours?
You were on it for 10 hours last night.
I was? I don't remember. Well, I'm afraid it didn't do much good. The old kidneys are too far gone for that. Someday, soon, we'll make one of those breakthroughs, and you'll be able to fit me for a new set. Or one. One'd be enough.
If a transplant were only possible.
Yeah, but it isn't yet. Anyway, I'm tired of talking about me. How's the little girl?
She came through with flying colors. We'll save both her kidneys.
There's a nice thing. And a sad thing.
What do you mean?
I'm a lifesaver. Well, in actuarial figures. I'm a statistician's delight because I've improved percentage figures on life expectancy in a lot of fields. But of all of them, whoever they were, I never got to know one single human being whose life my research ever saved.
There's one you can meet if you want. Dee Dee. You saved her life directly.
My best promise of whatever immortality I'll have. Yes. With all my heart, I want to meet Dee Dee. So, you're Dee Dee.
Yes, Mr. Champion.
How do you feel, Dee Dee?
Real good, thanks. How do you?
Oh, tolerable.
If you want to feel real good like me, you should have Dr. Johnson and Dr. Harding fix you up.
Ah, that's just what I aim to do.
They're a team.
And a good one.
The only thing is, they take an awful long time. And a person gets pretty tired.
Maybe it's time for you to go, huh?
Well, I don't mean to be, but I am real sleepy.
Yeah, come to think of it, so am I. Bye-bye, Dee Dee.
Bye, Steve. Get a good long rest. Sleep tight, Steve.
That's just what I'll do, Dee Dee. Dee Dee.
You can take her upstairs now, nurse. And close the door.
Bruce. Mr. Champion.
I know, Kathy. Steve.
Sleep tight, Steve. No woman ever said that to me but that little girl. When I never had.
We've got to get you back on the kidney.
Wouldn't help. It doesn't matter. Let the rest of them find the breakthroughs. I'm happy. You may be going to get married, Bruce, but I beat you to it, boy.
Beat me to what?
Editing out the cigars. I finally became a father.
So that's who you are. That means you are dead. You're a ghost.
Oh, I can think of pleasanter terms. Let's say your guardian angel. Why don't you pull over and park in that turnaround up ahead?
Why?
Well, you make up your own mind about that. Just be a good girl and stop there as I tell you.
All right.
Yeah, that's better. Nice and quiet. Easier to think.
I remember everything now. I was so sleepy, I didn't understand why I had to go and meet you. I owe you my life.
You don't really owe me anything, Dee Dee. Except that in you, I borrowed a little piece of immortality. As long as you lived. Of course, if you don't, I lose that. Now I have to go.
No, wait. How can I go back? I haven't the courage. I need help.
You don't need help except from within yourself. You see, I really am a ghost, Dee Dee. I don't exist. Except in some dim, buried subconsciousness, perhaps. I never was there.
But I've been talking to you. And just talking to you...
You've come to a decision. If you have, it's your own. Don't you see? The only one you've been talking to is yourself. Yourself. Yourself.
Where have you been? I've been out of my skull. I didn't know what to do. I was just about ready to call the police.
Frank, just hold me. Don't say anything.
Oh, I'll hold you. Don't ever worry. Oh. I'll hold you so you can never run away again.
I never will. Let's go inside. Home. And start all over again.
Of course, dearest. You must be terribly tired. You're worn out.
No, no, darling, no. I have a new lease on life. I'm looking for a new little boy who's going to be called Stevie. I'll even settle for a girl. We'll call her Stephanie. Come on, darling. Come, Frank.
Where?
You and I are going to build another piece of immortality for someone. You and I are going to have a new baby.
So Stephen Champion will achieve his piece of immortality after all. For the only sure life after death is the memory of us. The memory that stays in the hearts and minds of our friends and our families and their children and their children's children. I'll be back shortly.
Do you have young children in your home? Toddlers who are into everything before you can say Jack Robinson? Then you're the parent who needs to be especially careful about household chemicals and medicines. This is Robert Fuller for the Food and Drug Administration. Every year, thousands of children are accidentally poisoned in their homes, Many are injured, and some die from ingesting medicines, drain cleaners, bleaches, and other household products. It takes such a few seconds to open a bottle, to swallow the capsule. Yet a few seconds of your time could prevent it. To keep your child safe, keep household products and medicines out of reach. Read the label on all products and heed warnings and cautions. If you are using a product when called to the phone or door, take it with you. Don't leave it for the child to get into. And keep the number of your poison control center where you can get it quickly in an emergency. Remember, children act fast. So do poisons.
The U.S. Department of Transportation, the Advertising Council, and this station remind you to double up and share a ride with a friend. And today we're talking to the world's friendliest person.
May I shake your hand?
Yes, how do you do?
Thank you. Can I shake the other hand?
Yes, I've never had anyone shake both hands.
That's friendly, isn't it?
You are very friendly.
Can I shake your nose?
Tell us specifically what made you so friendly.
A carpool. It's called Park and Ride, and I'm a friendly person. Everybody in the neighborhood wants to go with me. See, what we do is ride up to a place where we can get a bus. We park.
Oh, yes.
Then we get on the bus.
Park and Ride.
That's right.
And once you get to work, what is your attitude? Are you friendly at work?
I'm so friendly that when I go to the water cooler, a lot of times the water evaporates, you know.
So actually, you attribute all of your friendliness just to the fact that you carpool to a Park and Ride.
Absolutely.
And
I save money by it. It helps the environment, gasoline, everything else.
Well, that's friendly.
And I'm a friendly person as a result of it.
Mm-hmm. What would you say is the friendliest thing anyone listening to us right now could do?
Walk over to a park bus and kiss it right between the headlights.
Mm-hmm.
Did Dee Dee really see a ghost in the car? Or was it just the evocation of a memory buried and forgotten in childhood, but still haunting the corridors of the mind? Doesn't really matter, does it? For ghosts are real. All of us carry them within us. Nor should the word ghost be feared. The most persistent of them are a heritage of our parents' love. As Steve said, a better name would be Guardian Angels. Our cast included Michael Wager, Marion Seldes, Robert Dryden, Hedy Galen, and Shelley Bruce. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
The preceding program was broadcast with the permission of the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Off the Sinus Medicines. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Public radio for a growing community. WUWM, Milwaukee.
This is Jazz Spectrum, 2 hours of jazz of all kinds. And this is Bill Felton bringing you tonight's program with the good wishes of Unlimited Jazz Limited, a nonprofit Wisconsin corporation made up of people just like you, people who love jazz. Tonight we're going to feature some of the masters of the art of jazz, such as Ruby Braff, Bob Brookmeyer, Dave Brubeck, Peggy Lee, and Quincy Jones. And along the way, we'll be paying tribute to the late Johnny Mercer, one of our great songwriters. During the program, we'll be telling you more about the activities of Unlimited Jazz Limited and coming events of jazz interest in the Milwaukee area. But now let's get off with Buddy Rich and Bugle Call Rag. Well, no doubt about it, it was Buddy Rich. And Bugle Call, solos by Chuck Findlay on trumpet, Jay Corey, tenor sax. The Alewives Jazz Festival is coming to town. The grand kickoff will be this coming Wednesday, July 7th at noon. That's down at the Performing Arts Center. And the Wisconsin Conservatory Combo will play on the opening day. So why don't you go down at noon? They have some food and refreshments there and listen to some good jazz by the Wisconsin Conservatory Combo at the PAC. You know, the Alewives Jazz Festival is a month-long series of 17 free outdoor concerts. And there will also be one major performance in Eline Hall. It's all presented by the Milwaukee Performing Arts Center during July. The regional festival includes free noontime performances every Wednesday and Friday in July, and also weekend performances on July 17th and 18th, and the next weekend, July 24th and 25th, in conjunction with the Alewives Arts and Crafts Festival. The outdoor concerts take place on the center's South Colonnade area facing Kilbourne Avenue. So if you're in the downtown area, beginning next Wednesday, come on down and listen to some good jazz during the noon hour. The jazz world was saddened about a week ago when it was announced that Johnny Mercer had passed on. Johnny was born in Savannah, Georgia, November 18, 1909. In his early years, he sang with Paul Whiteman and Benny Goodman during the 30s, and we're going to have some of those records tonight. Later on, he founded Capitol Records along with Glenn Wallace and I believe Buddy DeSilva, another songwriter. He recorded many tunes with Bing Crosby, which were quite famous and popular, such as Clementine and Bob White. Some of his other songs were Laura, written in 1944 for the movie of the same name, Jeepers Creepers, Old Black Magic, Moon River, Lazy Bones, in which he collaborated with Hoagie Carmichael. That was one of the big hits. On the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe, that tune won an Academy Award in 1946. In the Cool, Cool, Cool of the Evening, 1952, Moon River, 1962, and Days of Wine and Roses, 1963. Johnny started kind of young, at the age of 15. He wrote a tune in honor of his sister called Sister Susie, Struts Her Stuff. And he did some movie scores for Here Come the Waves, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, Daddy Long Legs, Star Spangled Rhythm, The Harvey Girls, and Broadway shows, St. Louis Woman, Top Banana, Lil Abner, and Foxy. Yes, Johnny Mercer had a full life, a very fine career, and of course he was one of the outstanding lyric writers of the songwriting business. Here he is singing one of his own tunes. It's called Accentuate the Positive.
Gather round me, everybody. Gather round me while I preach some. Feel a sermon coming on me. The topic will be sin, and that's what I'm again. If you wanna hear my story, then settle back and just sit tight while I start reviewing the attitude of doing right. Got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. You got got to spare.